Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 113, recorded Wednesday, January 27th, 2015. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast. 2014 was a bad year to fly, and restaurant trends go local. So coming to you today from the San Antonio Northwest Marriott in San Antonio, Texas. At least that's what the phone says. Although I do know I'm in San Antonio because I landed here. I mean, doing a quick down and back after the flight cancellations caused by the New York snowpocalypse that wasn't, just blew up my travel plans at the beginning of this week. This is, it's not a bad. I mean, it's an old Marriott. Let's just say that. I mean, this is a throwback. This is a throwback to some of the first Marriotts I stayed in sort of the late 1980s. This is one that, nice people, but it needs a refurb. So actually, I tried to get a podcast done over the Christmas holidays, which was a while ago. But I don't know, the eating and then the drinking and then the sleeping, it all got in the way. Funny how that works. But, after my sort of traditional 2-week hiatus from travel, before Christmas and then, after New Year's, my first trip of the new year, which was Monday the 5th, it started about right with an hour departure delay out of O'Hare. I mean, I couldn't complain too much, though. The plane was there. The crew was there. They were just waiting on the fuel truck, which, that morning's sub-zero temperatures had slowed down just a bit. It was frustrating but understandable. Walking down the jetway, the cold just about took my breath away, even in a heavy coat. I could have only imagined what the guys running the fuel trucks were doing. They probably needed just more than a few warming breaks. I was heading down to New Orleans that day, though, where the temperatures were about 50 degrees higher than Chicago's single digits. I kind of had a similar situation here here today in San Antonio, where I left Chicago. It was 20-some-odd degrees and snowing. I get to San Antonio. It's 80 degrees and sunny. All that says is, this time of year, you've just got to be a little bit more strategic about your travel choices. I mean, if you can. I'm always a bit more interested in making sales calls this time of year in Phoenix or, San Antonio, rather than, say, Minneapolis or Detroit. I tend to sort of prefer, going through United's Houston hub or American's, Dallas hub, as opposed to going through, say, Denver or Chicago. Or if I can't get away with that, then I'll try to vector through airports with good places to pass the time in case of delays. I've been connecting through Nashville recently on Southwest, and I stumbled across an outpost of Tootsie's, well-known sort of downtown music joint. I just ran across it as I was going through Concourse C, and it was complete with live music. They had, they had a duo in there playing. And then in the middle of Concourse C, which is near the sort of walk-by Yazoo City Brewery stand, there's another stage with live music. So, that's a place where, if you get trapped, you got something going. Of course, you can have, though, too much of a good thing. Like back in mid-November, United had a piano player in O'Hare at gate C-17 playing Christmas tunes. He had a really kind of a nice 5-tune repertoire that got real old real quick during a 45-minute flight delay. So following up, kind of spelunking through the Travel Commons Twitter feed. A couple of weeks before Christmas, I had to swing through New York on a last-minute trip, and being near the holidays, the rates were just absurd. I mean, it was a struggle to get a decent room for less than $300 a night. I mean, it just amazes me because I had paid less than $100 a night earlier that week in New Orleans. Anyhow, I ended up in a Kimpton Hotel, 70 Park Avenue, in the Murray Hill neighborhood of Manhattan. I've been a big fan of the Kimpton chain since I set up camp for 3 months in the Hotel Monaco in downtown Portland a couple of years back. You know, Kimpton's shtick is to be sort of an anti-chain, embracing the quirks of each locale, you know, each building, rather than trying to replicate a standard brand experience, sort of, you know, what Marriott has done with the refreshed courtyard, sort of same furniture, same lobby, same footprint in each property. You know, Kimpton makes a big point of being pet-friendly. I mean, in Portland, just about every morning I was there, the elevator would open and a dog would walk in, with its owner. You know, most of them were reasonably sized, but there were a couple of times when, I don't know, you know, there was just like some sort of bull mastiff that walked in and made for kind of tight quarters in what was a small elevator. At least he wasn't a drooly dog. Sort of not a normal experience at, say, your typical Starwood property. Another notable Kimpton quirk is their leopard print bathrobes. Again, a little different from the typical white terry numbers you get everywhere else. Walking into my room at 70 Park, it was laid out on the bed. I kind of stopped for a moment. I posted a picture to Twitter, and it drew quite the set of comments. They also have some fun loyalty perks like Raid the Minibar. I got into New York late that night, so the $30 credit that 70 Park gave me came in very handy, especially since it was one of the better stocked minibars I've seen in a while. My only beef is that Kimpton isn't in many of the places I'm going. New Orleans, Memphis. I'm lifetime platinum on Marriott, and I'm platinum on Starwood, but I got to tell you, I always look to stay at a Kimpton property when there's one available. So I was very concerned the following week when I saw the announcement that IHG, the Holiday Inn people, bought Kimpton. I mean, IHG, these guys, one of the blandest hotel chains in existence, buys out one of the quirkiest. I think the last Crown Plaza I stayed in was 6 years ago in Joburg, South Africa. I mean, IHG's last attempt to be hip was the Indigo chain. Now, how many of you have stayed there? I got to tell you, I'm going to be keeping my eyes on this deal. I just hope IHG doesn't screw up Kimpton. I'm glad that Marriott is giving up what I think is the consensus is it's a misguided attempt to get the FCC to approve them blocking individual Wi-Fi hotspots. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of weird. I just can't figure out why they want to so obviously poke their customers. And it can't be that much of a revenue thing because they're giving away Wi-Fi to just about everyone. I mean, I've been getting it free for a while as an upper-tier Marriott Rewards member. And then, you know, whenever you go to some of the lower-tier hotels, some of the lower-tier brands like Residence Inn and Courtyard, you know, they're giving it away. They're giving Wi-Fi away to everyone. And as of the middle of January, I think it was like around the 15th of this month, they were giving it away to all Marriott Reward members at the mainline Marriott brands. Indeed, you know, there's a sign on the Marriott website now that if you book direct with them, you know, boom, you got free Wi-Fi. I mean, which seems to be a trend. I mean, Kimpton does the same thing. Indeed, if you hit the Kimpton Wi-Fi login screen at one of their hotels and aren't a member of their loyalty program, their Karma program, you're taken immediately to an enrollment screen, which I think is important because, you know, hotel loyalty programs seem to be losing their grip, seem to be losing sort of their mojo. In a recent Google study, an increasing number of business travelers say that hotel loyalty programs have less impact on their travel planning this year than they did last year. The same study also found that most business travelers would switch programs for better perks. And given that free Wi-Fi is one of the most popular perks with frequent travelers, what Kimpton is doing and what Marriott is doing just makes sense. And then what Marriott tried to do as far as blocking Wi-Fi, just, I don't know, it just doesn't make any sense to me. Now, you know, Marriott's stated reason that it's all about security, that they wanted to protect their guests from rogue Wi-Fi hotspots. I mean, I mean, that's very buzzword compliant. You know, cybersecurity is hot right now. And of course, travelers do need to be careful about which Wi-Fi access points they connect to. Sweden's Pirate Party, and they're associated with the Pirate Bay BitTorrent site, they pulled a cute prank earlier this month that just highlighted kind of how gullible people are around this. They set up an access point, a Wi-Fi access point named Open Guest at some Swedish conference, and over 100 delegates, government officials, journalists, security experts, they all connected to it, using it for email, web browsing, Skype, buying stuff on eBay, just about everything. And the Pirate Party logged all this traffic. I mean, are people that gullible or cheap or both? I mean, even more of a reason for you to use your own hotspot. The Monday before Christmas, I wrote up the holiday airport etiquette tips from the last podcast episode. I wrote them up as a standalone blog post. It seemed like a timely post going into the holiday travel season. It was a pretty popular one. Rob, a longtime Travel Commons listener and Untapped friend, gave me a nice retweet saying, "A bit brusque, but the best travel tips I've read this year." And he was right. It was a bit brusque. I did not sugarcoat it a lot, just venting a bit from what I typically see. You know, gumming up the pre-check line, the Starbucks line, the concourse hallways. Probably was a little bit scroogey in my comments, but I don't know. Sometimes you got to speak truth to power. But what I thought was in the holiday spirit was a sign I saw on the bell stand of the Minneapolis Marriott. It said, "Brr, it's cold out. We have warm coats to lend you, available upon request. Please see your friendly bell staff person. Thank you and stay warm." I looked at that. I asked one of the bell guys, "How often do people take them up on the offer?" "Oh, a lot," the guy said. "Really?" I asked, "I mean, what part of you're coming to Minnesota in December, so dress warmly, do they not get?" He didn't say anything. He just sort of shrugged and gave me that sort of Minnesota nice smile. Hey, and if you've got any travel experiences, general observations, thoughts, questions, a story, comment, a travel tip, the voice of the traveler, send them along. The email address is comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com. You can use your smartphone to record and send in an audio comment. Send a Twitter message to M. Peacock. You can post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page, or you can always go old school and post your thoughts on the website at travelcommons.com. The first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is 2014 was a bad year to fly. You know, a couple of weeks ago, the Wall Street Journal posted its 2014 airline scorecard. Now, every travel columnist seems to do one of these, but I like the journals. I apologize to my international listeners right now, but this scorecard is just focused on the U.S., and indeed just the U.S. majors. Spirit and Hawaiian aren't in the mix, though Frontier, Alaska, and Virgin America are. I mean, I posted the scorecard graphic on the Travel Commons Facebook page when it came out. I'll also put it in the show notes. It scores the carriers across seven operational measures: on-time arrivals, canceled flights, extreme delays, two-hour tarmac delays, mishandled baggage, involuntary bumping, and complaints. And then, you know, generates an overall rank. The top three in order: Alaska, Virgin America, and Delta. The variability across the seven operational measures for these top performers was interesting, though. Alaska, the top overall score, had the best scores for on-time arrivals, extreme delays, and complaints, but they ended up being fifth out of eight in the mishandled baggage section. United, on the other hand, was more consistently the worst airline, ranking last, eighth in four measures, and seventh in the other three. which kind of doesn't surprise me because I got to tell you, their customer service, in 2014 just kept getting worse in sort of a cavalierly indifferent sort of way. I get to LaGuardia early one afternoon and want to move up to an earlier flight that is wide open. That'll cost you $75 to move from a full flight to an empty flight. Now, that just doesn't make sense. Or another time, a guy plopped down next to me in the middle seat. He originally had an aisle seat. Then United upgraded him to first class. Hey, bingo, there you go. But then, oops, not so fast. The first class passenger ended up showing up. So the guy had to go back to coach. Except they'd already given away his aisle seat, and all that was left was this middle seat next to me. So there he was stuck, with nothing but some shrugged shoulders and a mumbled sorry. I mean, you'd think they could have given him, I don't know, a couple of hundred frequent flyer points, even a drink coupon. I mean, even the lousiest restaurants will comp you a dessert, if things aren't right. Why not United? It was entertaining then in sort of a twisted way when I got an email from United actually last week offering to upgrade me from Premier Gold to Premier Platinum for $2,600. I mean, with these sorts of scores, sevens and eights, you'd think they'd be paying me or at least making it, something closer to an impulse purchase. But then again, they're probably looking at my other choices in Chicago, American with an overall score of 7 or Southwest scoring 5 out of 8. Chicago Hub Airlines are kind of like Chicago football and baseball teams, kind of fighting it out for the seller, except without the silver lining of high draft picks next season. So if you really think about it, 2014 absolutely was an awful year to fly. The airlines finally got market discipline through acquisitions, Delta buying Northwest, United buying Continental, American buying U.S. Airways, or was it the other way around? I could never quite figure that one out. But anyhow, through all these acquisitions, they got the oligopoly working, which, meant they pushed up prices and utilization, high fares and crowded planes. Add to that the consistent ratcheting down of the base level of services, what they call unbundling, charging an increasing amount for bags, change fees, pets, unaccompanied children, even decent seats. I mean, and all this while, the experience got worse. The actual butt in seat, in the plane experience got worse. The Wall Street Journal article gives data to prove, I think, what we all already knew. We're paying more for less. I mean, U.S. Airlines canceled 66,000 more flights in 2014 than in 2013. And remember, this is in an environment where the utilization rate, the number of empty seats, is drastically decreased. So once it's canceled, your ability to sort of reschedule is really limited. The airlines also lost or delayed 2.1 million bags. This is in spite of charging you for that. And that was a 17% increase in 2014 over 2013, which I think all of that kind of explains the 26% increase in complaints filed with the U.S. Department of Transportation. Not surprising then that American CEO told financial analysts and the press during yesterday's Q4 earnings call, quote, this is his quote, "We are not asking our customers to be happy with anything." I think he succeeded. We can always hope that 2014 will turn out to be the bottom, that the newer planes that the major carriers are buying will mean fewer mechanical delays and fewer cancellations, that more profitable airlines will stop demanding givebacks from their employees, which would mean a more pleasant experience in the air, happier flight attendants and pilots, and more enthusiastically productive mechanics and baggage handlers. Until then, I'm going to try to be happy with the little things, in spite of what the American CEO says. The unexpected first class upgrade on my United flight today coming down from Chicago to San Antonio. A couple of weeks ago, this sort of nearly empty midday flight from New Orleans to Chicago. The flight attendant told us we could change our seats when we wanted, but really nobody moved. Why? We all hit our own rows. I mean, last week I had an early arrival into Nashville that changed what was going to be a very tight connection into kind of a leisurely stroll through Concourse C, and also gave me time to pick up a beer at Yazoo City. I'll enjoy these little things because I'm hoping that the bigger things get better in 2015. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is restaurant trends go local. So while the trip to where you're going has gotten more miserable, odds are that the food is better once you get there. Every year I go to the National Restaurant Show looking at dining trends because frequent travelers have got to eat someplace. One of the most interesting trends that I've seen is the expansion of what a restaurant is. At the most recent NRA show, and that's National Restaurant Association, not National Rifle Association, there is a good-sized section devoted to food trucks. And depending on where you're traveling, you'll see more and more of them in the wild. Now, of course, food trucks are old hat in places like Manhattan and Center City, Philadelphia. And in Portland, I'm not really sure you can call them food trucks. I mean, the ones set up in those downtown parking lots don't look like they've moved in years. But elsewhere, the food trucks will touch down outside of office buildings or universities around lunchtime and offer up some very sort of cool, innovative, and often sort of locally unique food that provides some nice variety. Which ties into really another big trend, the shift to local. Locally sourced fish, meat and vegetables, locally made beer or vodka or whiskey, house-made pickles and charcuterie, all that, you know, which is, I guess, kind of a throwback. I mean, if you think about the 70s and 80s, big franchise chains expanded in the U.S. and then globally, pushing out standard menus with the same dishes everywhere. Now, the good side of this was that it took the guesswork and the risk out of picking a place to eat. I mean, no surprises, which is kind of both good and bad. I mean, if you stopped at a Kentucky Fried Chicken along the road or took a client out to a Morton's Steak, I mean, you knew what you were going to get and you could reasonably expect a certain level of quality. I mean, you kind of got that today with Starbucks. The reason they're so popular is you know you're going to get a decent cup of coffee. But, you know, also, you know, Kentucky Fried Chicken, Morton's, even Starbucks, you're not going to discover anything new, get anything unique to where you're visiting. Now, I mean, that's okay when food is fuel, right? I want to stop being hungry. It isn't, though, when food becomes something more, an experience or an expression of place, which is what it is now with these hyper-local trends. Yes, I mean, when it's overdone, it can feel like you've somehow slipped into a bad Portlandia episode. But when it's done right, you know, it can make you happy you gutted out that lousy flight to get there. Now, one trend I keep hearing about, but I got to tell you, I don't really see, is, kind of out in the wild in my travels, using tablets to replace menus and using smartphone apps for sort of self-service ordering and payment. I mean, every year at the NRA show, there are rows and rows of vendors showing these things, you know, iPad menus and then big pieces of metal to lock down the iPad so people don't walk away from them. And then, like I said, sort of smartphone apps to allow diners to order, to split the tab, and to pay, all without seeing a waiter or a bartender. Now, I got to tell you, I've seen, some of this stuff exactly twice. I saw an iPad list at Restaurant Revolution in New Orleans, and actually it was kind of intrusive. I mean, it lit up the face of the reader in what was otherwise kind of a, I don't want to say dimly lit, but sort of, subtly lit dining room. And then the self-ordering I saw at a restaurant, kind of a restaurant bar in Minneapolis Airport, where the bartender reached over and actually did the ordering for me, pressed on the touchpad. Now, this trend is different, I would say, from, alternative payment methods, sort of the tap and pay with Apple Pay or using the barcode on the Starbucks app. I mean, those are just different ways to end the transaction, but it's still the same transaction. What I don't see, in spite of 2 or 3 years of, this trend being hyped, is a move in a restaurant to self-service ordering or paying. Indeed, if anything, I see a move to more interaction with service staff, with, seemingly more folks taking full meals at the bar, and your server, the bartender, ends up being, never more than sort of 6 feet away from you, and on a slow night, is probably good for a little conversation. I guess if I'm coming to a place for local cuisine made from local produce, I'm not sure why I'd want to skip talking to the local people. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 113. I hope you enjoyed this show, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. Check out the show notes for music links. Here, looking out over, God, I think that is Interstate 410 here in San Antonio. I have no idea what bridge music I'm going to put into this thing. That'll wait for production. Hey, as always, if you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along. Text or audio file to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. M. Peacock on Twitter. Write them on the Travel Commons Facebook page or post them on the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken the time to send in emails, tweets, or post comments on Facebook or on the website. Sorry, I don't do Pinterest. I just can't figure it out. Anyhow, until we talk again, travel safe, and thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.
Home alone, life is hell. Strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing can ease my mind. The warm woman that I left behind. California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer.